Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast, the Messenger Edition. I am Nurse Carmen. We have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And next, we will be having a conversation with the Messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you once again for tuning in tonight to another edition. I want to start off by saying you came into this life with nothing to learn. You only have to demonstrate what you already know. In the demonstration of it, will you function it out and create yourself anew through your experience? Thus, do you justify life and give it purpose? Thus, do you render it holy? You came into this life with nothing to learn. And as you begin to go within and know who it is that you are, you will better understand the fact that you came into this life with nothing to learn. Now, a question was asked to me, are you saying that things that happen to us are things of our own choosing? And I say, not all things which you call bad, which happen to you, are of your own choosing. not in the conscious sense. They are all of your own creation. You are always in the process of creating every moment, every minute, every day. How you can create, we'll go into later. For now, just take my word. You are a big creation machine, and you are turning out a new manifestation literally as fast as you can think. Events, occurrence, happenings, conditions, circumstances, all are created out of consciousness. Individual consciousness is powerful enough. So you can imagine what kind of creative energy is unleashed whenever two or more are gathered in God's name. And mass consciousness, why, that is so powerful it can create events and circumstances of worldwide import and planetary consequences. It would not be accurate to say, not in the way that he meant, that you are choosing these consequences. You are not choosing them any more than God is choosing them. Like God, you are observing them and deciding who you are with regards to them. Yet, there are no victims in the world and no villains, and neither are you a victim of other choices. At some level, you have all created what which you say you detest, and having created it, you have chosen it. This is an advanced level of thinking, and it is one which all masters reach sooner or later. For it is only when they can accept responsibility for all of it that they have achieved the power to change part of it. So long as you entertain the notion that there is something or someone else out there doing it to you, you disempower yourself to do anything about it. Only when you say, I did this, can you find the power to change it. It is much easier to change what you are doing than to change what other is doing. The first step in changing anything is to know and accept that you have chosen it to be what it is. If you can't accept this on a personal level, agree to it through your understanding that we are all one. Seek then to create change not because a thing is wrong, but because it no longer makes an accurate statement of who you are. There is only one reason to do anything, as a statement to the universe of who you are. Used in this way, life becomes self-creative. You use life to create yourself as who you are and who you always wanted to be. There is also only one reason to undo anything, because it is no longer a statement of who you want to be. It does not reflect you. It does not represent you. That is, it does not represent you. If you wish to be accurately represented, you must work to change anything in your life which does not fit into the picture of you that you wish to project into eternity. In the largest sense, all the bad things that happen are of your choosing. The mistake is not in choosing them, but in calling them bad. For in calling them bad, you call yourself bad, since you created them. This label you cannot accept. So rather than label yourself bad, you disown your own creation. It is this intellect and spiritual dishonesty which lets you accept a world in which conditions are as they are. If you had to accept or even felt a deep inner sense of personal responsibility for the world, it would be a far different place. This would certainly be true if everyone felt responsible. That this is so pertinently obvious is what makes it so utterly painful. The world's natural calamities and disasters, its tornadoes and hurricanes, volcanoes and floods, Its physical turmoils are not created by you specifically. What is created by you is the degree to which these events touch your life. Events occur in the universe with no stretch of the imagination could calm your instigated or created. These events are created by the combined consciousness of man. All of the world co-creating together, producing these experiences. What each of you do individually is move through them, deciding what, if anything, they meant to you and who and what you are in relationship to them. Thus, you create collectively and individually the life and times you are experiencing for the sole purpose of evolving. You ask if there is a less painful way to undergo this process, and the answer is yes. Yet nothing in your outward experience will have changed. The way to reduce the pain which you associate with earthly experiences and events, both yours and those of others, is to change the way you behold them. You cannot change the outer events, for that has been created by the lot of us, and you are now not grown enough in your consciousness to alter individually that which has been created collectively. So you must change the inner experience. This is the road to mastery in living. Nothing is painful in and of itself. Pain is a result of wrong thought. It is an error in thinking. A master can disappear the most grievous pains. In this way, the master heals. Pain results from a judgment you have made about a thing. Remove the judgment and the pain disappears. Judgment is often based upon previous experiences. Your idea about a thing derives from a prior idea about that thing. Your prior idea results from a still prior idea, and that idea from another, and so forth, like building blocks, until you get all the way back in the hall of mirrors to what we'll call first thought. All thought is creative, and no thought is more powerful than original thought. That is why this is sometimes also called original sin. Original sin is when you first thought about a thing and is an error. That error is compounded many times over when you have a second or third thought about a thing. It is the job of the Holy Spirit to inspire you to new understandings, which can free you from your mistakes. So, wait, are you saying that I shouldn't feel bad about the starving children of Africa? The violence, the earthquakes that kill hundreds in Brazil? There are no shoulds or shouldn't in God's world. Do what you want to do. Do what reflects you, what represents you as a grander version of yourself. If you want to feel bad, feel bad. But judge not and neither condemn. For you know not why a thing occurs, nor to what end. And remember you this, that which you condemn will condemn you, and that which you judge will one day become. Rather, seek to change those things or support others who are changing those things, which no longer reflect your highest sense of who you are. All. For all is the creation of God through life living, and that is the highest creation. But those who taught me all about the rights and wrongs, the do's and don'ts, the shoulds and shouldn't, told me all those rules were laid down by God. Then those who taught you were wrong. God has never set down a right or a wrong, a do or a don't. To do so would be to strip you completely of your greatest gift, the opportunity to do as you please and experience the results of that. the chance to create yourself anew in the image and likeness of who you really are, the space to produce a reality of a higher and higher you based on your grandest idea of what it is of which you are capable. To say that something, a thought, a word, an action is wrong would be as much as to tell you not to do it. To tell you not to do it would be to prohibit you. To prohibit you would be to restrict you. To restrict you would be to deny the reality of who you really are, as well as the opportunity for you to create and experience that truth. There are those who say that God has given you free will. Yet these same people claim that if you do not obey God, God will send you to hell. What kind of free will is that? Does this not make a mockery of God? To say nothing of any sort of true relationship between you and God. Well, now we're getting into another area. From what I've been telling people, they say, what, so there's no such thing as hell? There is hell, but it is not what you think. And you do not experience it for the reasons you have been given. So what is hell? It is the experience of the worst possible outcome of your choices, decisions, and creations. It is the natural consequences of any thought which denies God or says no to who you are in relationship to God. It is the pain you suffer through wrong thinking. Yet even the term wrong thinking is a misnomer because there is no such thing as that which is wrong. Hell is the opposite of joy. It is unfulfillment. It is knowing who and what you are and failing to experience that. It is being less. That is hell, and there is none greater for your soul. But hell does not exist as this place that you have fantasized, where you burn in some everlasting fire or exist in some state of everlasting torment. What purpose could God have in that? Even if God did hold the extraordinary ungodly thought that you did not deserve heaven, why would God have a need to seek some kind of revenge or punishment for your failing? Wouldn't it be a simple matter for God to just dispose of you? What vengeful part of God would require that God subject you to eternal suffering of a type that at a level beyond description? If you answered the need for justice, would not a simple denial of communication with God and heaven serve the ends of justice? Is the unending infliction of pain also required? I tell you, there is no such experience after death as you have constructed in your fear-based theology. Yet there is an experience of the soul so unhappy, so incomplete, so less than whole, so separate from God's greatest joy, that to your soul, this would be hell. But I tell you, God does not send you there, nor do God cause this experience to be visited upon you. You yourself created the experience, whenever and however you separate yourself from your own highest thoughts about you. You yourself created the experience. Whenever you deny yourself, whenever you reject who and what you really are, yet even this experience is never eternal. It cannot be, for it is not God's plan that you be separated from God forever and ever. Indeed, such a thing is an impossibility. For to achieve such an event, not only would you have to deny who you are, God would have to do as well. This God would never do, and so long as one of us holds the truth about you shall ultimately prevail. But if there is no hell, Does that mean that I can do what I want, act as I wish, commit any act without fear or retribution? Is it fear that you need in order to be, do, and have what is instinctively right? Must you be threatened in order to be good? And what is being good? Who gets to have the final say about that? Who sets the guidelines? Who makes the rules? Well, I'm here to tell you this. You are your own rule maker. You set the guidelines, and you decide how well you have done, how well you are doing. For you are the one who has decided who and what you really are, and who you want to be. And you are the only one who can assess how well you're doing. No one else will judge you ever for why and how. How could God judge God's own creation and call it bad? If God wanted you to be and do everything perfectly, God would have left you in the state of total perfection once you came. The whole point of the process was for you to discover yourself, create yourself as you truly are, and as you truly wish to be. Yet, you could not be that unless you also had a choice to be something else. Should God therefore punish you for making a choice that God himself had laid before you? If God did not want you to make the second choice, why would God create other than the first? This is a question you must ask yourself before you would assign God the role of the condemning God. The direct answer to the question is, yes, you may do as you wish without fear or retribution. But it may serve you, however, to be aware of consequences. Consequences are results, natural outcomes. These are not at all the same as retribution or punishment. Outcomes are simply that. They are what results from the natural application of natural laws. They are that which occur quite predictably as a consequence of what has occurred. All physical life function in accordance with natural laws. Once you remember these laws and apply them, you have mastered life at the physical level. What seems like punishment to you, or what you would call evil or bad, is nothing more than a natural law asserting itself. So then they say, then if I were to know these laws and obey them, I would never have a moment's trouble again? Is that what I'm saying here? You would never experience yourself as being in what you call trouble. You would not understand any life situation to be a problem. You would not encounter any circumstances with trepidation. You would put an end to all worries, doubts, and fears. You would live as you fantasize Adam and Eve lived, not as a disembodied spirit in the realm of the absolute, but as an embodied spirit in the realm of the relativity. Yet, you would have all the freedoms, all the joy, all the peace, and all the wisdom, understanding, and power of the spirit you are. You would be a fully realized being. This is the goal of the soul. This is its purpose, to fully realize itself while in the body, to become the embodiment of all that is really is. This is God's plan for you. This is God's idea that God should become realized through you. Thus, that concept is turned into experience, that God might know God's self experientially. The laws of the universe are laws that God laid down. They are perfect laws, creating perfect functions of the physical. Have you ever noticed, or have you ever seen anything more perfect than a snowflake? Its designs, its symmetry, its conformity to itself and originally from all else. All are a mastery. You wonder at the miracles of the awesome display of nature. Yet, if God could do this for a single snowflake, what do you think God can do, have done, with the universe? Were you to see the symmetry of it, the perfection of its design, from the largest body to the smallest particle, you would not be able to hold the truth of it in your reality. Even now, as you get glimpses of it, you cannot yet imagine or understand its implications. Yet you can know these are implications far more complex and far more extraordinary than your present comprehension can embrace. Shakespeare said it wonderful. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Then how can I know these laws? How can I learn them? It is not a question of learning, but remembering. So now somebody's going to say, well, how can I remember them? Being by being still. Quiet the outer world so that the inner world might bring you sight. This insight is what you seek, yet you cannot have it while you are so deeply concerned about your outer reality. Seek, therefore, to go within as much as possible. And when you are not going within, come from within as you deal with the outside world. Remember what I always say, if you don't go within, you go without. Put it in the first person as you repeat it to make it more personal. If I do not go within, I go without. You have been going without all of your life, yet you do not have to and never did. There is nothing you cannot be. There is nothing you cannot do. And there is nothing you cannot have. This sounds like some pie in the sky promise. What other kind of promise would you have God make? Would you believe God if God promised you less? For thousands of years, people have disbelieved the promise of God for the most extraordinary reason. They were too good to be true. So you have chosen a lesser promise, a lesser love. For the highest promise of God proceeds from the highest love. Yet you cannot conceive of a perfect love, and so a perfect promise is also inconceivable, as is a perfect person. Therefore, you cannot believe even in yourself. Failure to believe in any of this means failure to believe in God. For belief in God produces in God's greatest gift, unconditional love. And God's greatest promise, unlimited potential. Now, they say that I've heard talk of unlimited potential before, and it doesn't square with the human experience. Forget the difficulties encountered by the average person. What about the challenges of those born with mental or physical limitations? Is their potential unlimited? But you have written so in your own scriptures in many ways and in many places. Look to see what has been written in Genesis 11, verse 6 of your Bible. It says, "And the Lord said, behold, the people are one, and they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do." Now, do you think they are unlimited? Do you think the handicapped are unlimited, as you put it, not for their choice? Do you imagine that a human soul encounters life challenges, whatever there may be, by accident? Is this what you imagine? So you say, oh, so you're telling me that the soul chose what kind of life it would experience ahead of time? No, that would defeat the purpose of the encounter. The purpose is to create your experience and thus create yourself in the glorious moment of now. You do not therefore choose the life you will experience ahead of time. You may, however, select place and event, the conditions and circumstances, the challenges and obstacles, the opportunities and options with which to create your experience. You may select the color of your palettes, the tools of your chest, the machinery of your shop. Which you create with these is your business. That is the business of life. Your potential is unlimited in all that you've chosen to do. But do not assume that a soul which has incarnated in a body which you call limited has not reached its full potential. For you do not know what that soul was trying to do. You do not understand its agenda. You are unclear as to its intent. Therefore, bless every person and condition and give thanks. Thus you affirm the perfection of God's creation and show your faith in it, for nothing happens by accident in God's world, and there is no such thing as a coincidence, nor is the world buffered by random choice or something you call fate. If a snowflake is utterly perfect in its design, do you not think the same could be said about something as magnificent as life? I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to open the floor, and if no one at this time has any questions or anything, I think I'm going to leave it there for tonight to give us something to think about. Think about who you are, and who do you want the world to see you as? We have to understand that just because what we see in the mirror, that's not all of us. We are three-part being, mind, body, and soul. The mind and the body, they're not sure about things, but the soul is. And this is why I'm always telling people, listen to your soul. Deal. And listen. Because God is speaking to all of us all the time. I thank you all very much. I pray that something was said that might lead you deeper within so that you may come to know exactly who you are and who it is that you want to be. I love you all very much. Good night. Have a great week. Ending of the week and a fantastic weekend, and I look forward to talking to you all again Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Love you all, and nothing you can do about it. Go.
Thank you.
Yourself.
Love you.
Love you too. Good night.
Bye-bye.